Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to The Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferraci.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Whole Scoop. We are a health and wellness radio show where our guests are always highly credentialed in their fields. The goal of this program is to present different perspectives to allow you, the listener, to make informed decisions. I'm your host, Carol Ferraci, a registered licensed dietitian, practicing for 30 years, and the founder of Naturally Nutrition. You can check me out at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. You know, I always tell you, it's important for me to provide you highly qualified guests. Tonight's show is absolutely no exception, but let me tell you what the exception is tonight. We are talking about a subject tonight that's very difficult to talk about, and it's a subject that is one of those things where some people want to hear it, some people don't. But, you know, it's so important. It's so very important. So tonight's show is Ropes That Bind with Tracy Stoppler. Those of you who have been following the show, you know Tracy. She's been on the show. She's been a wonderful, welcomed guest for a variety of different reasons because she's just that talented and she's just so versatile. But let me remind you, no matter how versatile and wonderful Tracy is and all of our guests, it's important for you to seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions discussed on this program. The call-in number is 347-855-8894, and you can also direct questions and comments to the Whole Scoop Blog Talk Radio group on Facebook, and we will be taking questions. And you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram. I think we're everywhere now. We're on LinkedIn, all kinds of things. So, again, the call-in number is 347-855-8894. We will be taking some questions later on in the show. At that time, I'm going to call out the last four digits of your telephone number. And remember to press the number 1 if you want to become part of the queue for questions. All that being said, let's talk about Tracy for a minute. She grew up in the Bronx. She received a Bachelor's of Science in Dietetics and a Master's of Science in Nutrition and Exercise Physiology from New York University. In 1989, she started her own business, Nutrition ETC Incorporated, which offers individualized nutrition and fitness plans and classes in nutrition and physiology, fitness, and meditation. She teaches nutrition and exercise performance at Adelphi University, is a dietetics mentor for several Long Island universities, and has written extensively about nutrition and fitness. Tracy is also a licensed pastry chef and walks 3 miles every day with her dog. 6 years ago, Tracy began volunteering as a child victim advocate for the Safe Center, a Long Island-based refuge for victims of sexual abuse and domestic violence. She is now the Enough Abuse campaign coordinator at the Safe Center. Her first novel, The Ropes That Bind, based on a true story of sexual abuse, has actually published. We were kind of billing this as being published tomorrow, but it's actually published earlier this week, so it is now available, but it's brand new. And it's based on an incident of her own life. All that being said, let's bring on Tracy, and then we'll talk a little bit more. Tracy?
Hi, everyone. Hi, Carol. Thanks again for having me on the show. I love working with you.
You're always welcome on this show, Tracy, and especially for what we're about to talk about. I know it's going to be a kind of a difficult topic, but you have a lot to say. You have a lot to share. So I kind of want to let everybody know. Some people might be listening and saying, why is a health and wellness radio show doing this? Because let me just tell you, I'm going to give you a few statistics here because I don't want to do a whole lot in statistics tonight. 1 in 3 girls, 1 in 7 boys are sexually abused before the age of 18. 39 million sexual abuse survivors in the United States. Okay, so why still is a health and wellness radio show doing this? Because the effects of such experiences can cause impaired brain development, poor mental and emotional health, cognitive difficulties, feeding problems, nutritional deprivation, neuromotor handicaps, physical defects, sexually transmitted diseases including HIV, urinary tract infections that are chronic and recurrent, behavioral consequences, delinquency, you name it, it impacts every facet of someone's life. And then there's also the people that are indirectly impacted. With all that being said, the childwelfare.gov people estimate that $124 billion a year in lifetime costs for child maltreatment. So why is the whole scoop doing this? Because we all need to know. We need to talk about this. We need to say what's out there, what it's about. And then we're going to talk about some of the positive things that can come out of it. And I know that sounds weird and I know that sounds strange, but Tracy, you're going to do a wonderful job at kind of bringing all this full circle. So why don't you tell us about your book?
Okay. The Ropes That Bind is about a young girl's journey to overcome adversity. And I just want to point out that there are many adversities. In a little bit, I'm going to talk about a very important study that people need to know about, the Adverse Childhood Experience Study. So one, child sexual abuse is just one adversity, but there's tremendous effects of adversity. And you know I'm going to turn this into a positive end result because we have the ability to turn negatives into positive. So even through her trauma, like my trauma of childhood abduction and sexual abuse, what's universal is our habitual negative thinking that prevents us from moving forward and becoming our best and living our purpose. So I really felt that the book needed to be written, and I don't know how to explain it, but my daytime experiences and my nighttime dreams fueled my writing. And although it wasn't easy to write, and I've been told that some parts were actually really hard to read, it really was quite healing. And I started writing the story over a decade ago, long before I started volunteering at the Safe Center. And being mindful to not give away the story's ending, I'm just going to say that I really believe in the saying, let it be written, let it be done, and everything happens for a reason. There's quite a few things that I wrote in the book that actually came to fruition. Years later, I found that fascinating.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that there's probably not much as it relates to you writing this book that you haven't found is kind of like a deja vu moment at times where you just like have flashbacks to, wow, you know, that I can't believe this happened as a result of this or something. Is that, do you find that?
There are a lot of connections, but I think my main purpose in writing this story, one was to be a healing journey for me, and two, if possible, to be a healing journey for others. I actually had no intention of publishing this. I had started to journal this through therapy, and my therapist just suggested that I should seriously consider sharing this because it is very inspirational. I know the topic, like you said, is very difficult, but the story itself is very inspirational. But I want to just point out to the listeners, even though it is based on a true story, it is still a novel.
Okay. But when you were writing this, and your intent obviously is to get out some of this information, but to present it in novel format, but when you were writing this, when you were feeling certain aspects, and people have already said, as you just said, that some of it was hard to read, what can the listener of tonight expect from your book in terms of maybe it's somebody that is kind of just becoming familiar with this subject and maybe trying to learn from it, or maybe it's somebody who's relating because they too have similar experiences and they need to feel that connection. Have you been, you know, and some of the people that have read your book and obviously have collaborated with you in terms of when you were writing it, What kind of feedback did you get from that in terms of what people were feeling when they were reading?
Okay, so some of the feedback, I actually would like to quote one female survivor because I'm quoting it because I think she says it better than I could. This is her quote. "Before I opened this book, I poured myself some wine. I knew there were life lessons waiting for me, and Tracy Stockler did not disappoint. She created a real-life character, Tally Stark, who struggled with a real-life problem, living with the secrecy and shame of childhood sexual abuse. She also created in me a sense of hope and a feeling I had never experienced before, forgiveness to my younger self. So pour yourself some wine, but don't forget the tissues."
Wow. How powerful is that? I'm surprised you got through that right now.
Well, I was very touched by it. And reading the quotes from survivors, but also from everyone who read the book, that made me feel much appreciation for writing it. I knew that there was a purpose, but the purpose, I can't experience the purpose until I share it. And I think that leads me to letting listeners know who are survivors. You don't have to go through your life living a secret. There are people out there who are incredibly compassionate, and there are a lot of survivors out there, and you're not alone. And I think that sharing the secret is the first step to removing any shame that you may have, but also to a full recovery. And that's really the intent of the book. I feel that in writing this book, I have finally made it to the other side, and I just wish that for other survivors.
So let's just take a minute and kind of just let's delve into this for just a second, okay? The secret. Obviously, people don't want to be sharing the secret. And we just don't really allow for people to be very verbal on this. I mean, I've known people personally that have been impacted by this that were actually ostracized by their family members when they tried to speak about it. The amount of shame that's involved because you chose to speak about it and then become ostracized from your family, if that's not bad enough, I mean, the experience in itself is enough to play all kinds of havoc mentally and emotionally. So when you talk about sharing the secret, aren't there levels or are there levels of sharing that secret and with whom and how and why and all of those things that go through my head as you say that?
Okay, and actually that's really important. First, I want to mention a research study that was done by Dr. Ann Salter. And this is very powerful. What she found was that the time spent in secrecy actually contributed to the trauma more than anything else, including violence. So that I just want to point out that's why it is so important for adults.
So in other words, violence is because it's such a well-kept secret that it stays inside, and the violence then is an external expression of what might be of what hasn't been able to come out? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think the study, and I don't have it in front of me, talks about a single incident where there was violence to the attack versus someone who experienced the attack but never talked about it. So someone who goes into therapy or has a confidant that they can share this with, they always heal faster than someone who keeps it inside of them. So, for example, the ropes that bind is meant to represent the universal public health problem of adverse childhood experiences. And I want to talk about the study because it is a study that everyone needs to know about. It was done by Dr. Vincent Valitti and Dr. Rabindranda. And I'll go into it briefly, but I think by me going into it, the audience will really understand the importance of the study. Together they asked 17,500 adults about their history of exposure to what they called adverse childhood experiences or ACEs. And ACEs were broken down into three categories. It was broken down into physical, emotional, or sexual abuse, physical or emotional neglect, or the third, a family one that perhaps included a parent's mental illness, a drug or alcohol abuse problem with the parents, a separation or divorce, incarceration, or domestic violence. So all of these things contribute to a childhood trauma. So for every yes, you would get a point on your ACE score. And then what they did was they correlated these ACE scores against health outcomes. And what they found was striking. They found two things. One, ACEs are incredibly common. 67% of the population had at least one ACE. And 1 in 8, that's 12.5%, had about 4 or more ACEs. And I know statistics is not going to be much to the audience, so I'm not going to go into the statistics part. But number two, and I think that this would mean more to your audience, the higher your ACE score, the worse your health outcome. So for a person with an ACE score of 4 or more, the relative risk for depression was 4.5 times higher than someone with an ACE score of 0. So,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, this is why it's important that we talk about it. So the exact effect of ACEs, it varies widely for each person, but an example would be socially, some people will isolate themselves or struggle or avoid intimate relationships. People, they may have emotional issues. Some will struggle with anxiety and depression, or some might even become hypervigilant because of the event. Cognitively, now this I found, and there's studies that show this, brain scans that actually show that there are cognitive differences between someone who had a childhood trauma versus someone who did not. And for that reason, they'll have trouble focusing in school or they'll develop OCD. So what they found cognitively is that there's a change in brain chemistry. And I'm sorry if you hear my dog barking in the background.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry about that. Do you hear her? Because I can try to close.
No, that's good. It's okay. It's all good.
Okay.
It's good.
So the research has found that there is a decreased activity of the prefrontal cortex, which is the decision-making center of the brain, and they found that there was an increased activity of the amygdala, the fear center of the brain. And, of course, I'm going to make this positive, and I'm going to let you know that there are so many things that we can do to change that. But someone has to be able to talk about it first, to be open to change. And things that can change that is really being mindful to healthy eating, to exercise, to making sure you get enough sleep, to surrounding yourself by positive people and having positive, healthy relationships. That actually changes brain chemistry so that any negative feelings that you're having, you can actually change them. You can, and it doesn't matter how old you are. And it doesn't matter what the experience is. Whatever it is that you have gone through, you can absolutely turn it around.
Well, and I think that brings up a really good point, because even though this particular subject tonight is on child sexual abuse, what you're talking about is any kind of trauma in childhood. And that doesn't necessarily have to be sexually related. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, that's why adverse childhood experiences is universal. The topic in my book, where it's specifically about childhood abduction and sexual abuse, thank God that not universal, although child sexual abuse, like you mentioned some statistics earlier, I know that what I teach at the SAFE Center through the Enough Abuse Program, we're told to say that there are a lot of studies, but they're retrospective studies because kids mm-hmm. don't talk about it. So what we're finding, we're basing this research on these statistics, we're basing it on the retrospective studies of adults who were interviewed and talked about child sexual abuse. But we don't talk about it for years later. So that's why we have to assume that these we can't pinpoint them. They're estimated.
Okay. That being said, you mentioned a really good point about, you know, some positive factors and some things that you can do to turn some things around. But I would imagine that a childhood trauma of any kind, especially this kind, what you're saying and the things that you brought up would require someone to take care of themselves. And we haven't even started to dive into the whole self-esteem issues that are attached to this. And so how difficult must it be for someone who has experienced a childhood trauma to then pick themselves up, literally pick themselves up and figuratively, and take care of themselves and say, I'm important enough. I am important to be taken care of, and I need to take care of me. I mean, that to me would require a whole lot of work and a whole lot of help. And let me just say this before you answer. When I say this, that's a good thing. Please, you know, people need to know that getting help is important and it's a good thing to do. So that is not said lightly, and it's not said facetiously. It's said with the intent. Good, solid health requires that you take the steps necessary to seek any resources that get you to a point where you become healthy. Would you not agree with that, Tracy?
Yes, but that's also why it is really important to surround yourself with people who love you, so that, you know, when you're a kid, you don't want to upset your parents. So that is, I mean, there are so many reasons why children don't disclose. I think it's very important, really important, that we realize that children rarely make up accusations of sexual abuse. Do children lie? Absolutely. They lie that it's not happening. And it's far more common for children to minimize or deny the extent of the abuse. And what happens is children will often test the waters by disclosing lesser events to see how the parents or the adult responds or reacts. And this is
an example of that.
Mm-hmm. But this is what's crucial. If the parent or the adult responds calmly and supportively, and listens and doesn't yell or react with denial, then the child will continue. So dealing with disclosures, it's so funny, I just created a flyer today for a seminar that's coming up. We've got to believe the children. We've got to talk with a child in a quiet and private setting so that they're not embarrassed that someone might be listening. We, as the listener, we've got to remain calm, because if we're not, the child will be confused and frightened about what happened. So the adult's got to stay calm. But we've also got to remember that as the adult who's listening, that we're not alone, that there are people who can help us to help the child. So, for example, on Long Island, there's the SAFE Center, but every town has a refuge to call. The New York State has a phone number, and this is New York State, where you can report child sexual abuse. There are mandated reporters, health professionals, teachers who must report. So we cannot promise a child that we're not going to tell anyone. Our responsibility to protect the child, it is not the child's responsibility to do any more work except to be a child. So what we can't tell the child is we cannot tell the child that we're going to keep the secret with them. When a child starts to disclose, some children will say, please don't tell anyone. And we really have to make sure that we let the child know that we won't tell other children, but we've got to tell at least one other adult who can help us. That's really important. We also have to make sure that we don't make promises that we can't keep. And that could range for a lot of different reasons. For example, we can't promise them that the person, especially if the abuser is a relative, we can't promise them that the relative is not going to get into trouble. Again, I already said this in a different way. We have to not get upset in front of the child. And,
right.
You know, if it's okay, I think it is important enough that I'm actually trying to look up. Yes. Is it okay that I give out the New York State Child Abuse Hotline?
Well, of course. But
okay.
Give me 1 second. What I want to do is I think we should give that out. You can absolutely go ahead and give that out right now, and then I have a follow-up for you based on what you're just talking about.
Okay. Before I give out the number, I just want to remind your listeners that if a child does disclose to them, it is not their responsibility to conduct an investigation. And the reason why I say, and this is so important, is because they can actually mess up the investigation. So the best.
Well, I think, and you know what, Tracy, that's an excellent point. But I kind of want to bring it back a little bit because I want to break it down a little bit more because yes, your points are just. They're overwhelming. They're wonderfully overwhelming because you're giving out so much great information. But the thing is that I kind of want to make sure that people understand that if you do yell at your child while your child is trying to tell you about an abusive situation, please stop yourself and think and rethink that position because you know everybody's human, and at some point maybe they don't really mean to yell and they react. And so if you do react like that, you know, bounce back. Don't feed into it. Bounce back and take care of your child. So I guess what I'm trying to say is if you're a parent hearing this, it can't be easy to hear it. And so not everyone's going to react exactly the way that they should, maybe, possibly right away. So let's give them a little leeway at first and then bring them right back because you don't get a lot of leeway on this topic. You have to react appropriately.
Respond appropriately.
Right. I'm sorry, respond is a better word. Thank you. It's critical because if you don't, you could impact even more greatly this. So before you give out that number, I'm going to take a break real fast and remind everybody you're listening to the Whole Scoop Radio on Blog Talk Radio. We're talking with Tracy Stockler, and we're talking about her new book, The Ropes That Bind. And we are going to be taking some questions. We got some questions on the board, so we're going to be taking some questions real shortly here. I just checked the blog. I don't see any questions yet on the blog, but I can tell that people are listening, so that's a good thing. Tracy, do you want to give out any contact information, or you just want to give out the book information or how they can get it?
No, I actually want to just give out the New York State Child Abuse Hotline number, just so that they can keep it. Just so they can keep it somewhere nearby when they need it. It's 1-800-342-3720. And that's the New York State Child Abuse Hotline. My website where you can get more information on how to maybe even come to a local seminar is theropesthatbind.com. It's the name of the book.com. It's its own website. And there's a lot of information. There's also a book trailer. I would love for you to watch it. It's a little over 2 minutes. And I just appreciate the support.
Well, and I think that everybody needs to realize that, you know, this, I think the fact that you wrote this book in novel format is probably the best way to go with something like this, because if you're going to learn about this topic or you're going to connect with this particular topic, the novel format is not as and I'm not, this is not necessarily a great word, but maybe it's not as threatening as if you pick up a manual and you say, oh, do this, don't do that kind of thing. You learn from a novel, you can relate from a novel, you can identify, and you can laugh and cry at the same time, and it's okay. And
yes.
And I think that it's important for everybody to realize that. So please go pick up a copy of this book. And it's on Amazon now?
It is on Amazon now.
Yes, good. Thank you. Are you ready? I want to kind of bring this full circle in just a few minutes, but we've got some people who have been hanging on with the questions. So let's take one question now. Is that okay?
I would love that. Thank you.
Okay. We're going to do caller 0573. 0573. Hello?
Do you want to remind them that if they want to talk, they have to press 1?
Well, they did. There's a question in the queue here, and it's caller 0573, the last 4 digits
Hello.
Of the phone. Hi.
Hi. Oh, sorry. I love your show. Great show.
Hi.
Very hard, difficult concepts, but I think it's being handled very well, and certainly a lot of information. So thank you for all that. My question is a little lighter than the conversation that we've had, and you certainly, Tracy, bring a lot of knowledge to bear here. I was wondering if, two-part question, I was wondering if there was anything specific that you've learned as an author in writing the character's story that you didn't know before writing it, and are you using that knowledge today?
Wow, that's a really good question. That might be another book.
I'm sitting here going, go ahead, answer that one, Tracy.
That's really a great question. What comes to mind, I have to tell you, the character Tally Stark is a very strong character, and I just want to tell you that I purposely gave her the name of Tally Stark, and this will answer your question. Her name Tal comes from the Hebrew word dew, like the dew of heaven, which refers to blessings and prosperity or redemption. And her last name, Stark. And in the story, Tally's grandmother, even though the grandmother never knew what happened to her, she always reminded Tally what her name meant. And what I feel is that even though I don't fully know what Tracy Stoppler means, I took on the meaning of Tally Stark. I felt by the end of the book, because during the writing of the book, I wanted to be like her. I wanted to have her strength. By the end of the book, I felt like I adopted it. What a fabulous question. Thank you. I actually just thank you for that question.
I look forward to getting the book. Thank you.
Did you have a
thank
second
you very
question
much
I'm
for the call.
To ask?
The second part was, and I think you answered it, the second part is how you're using the knowledge today. But I think, you're living it every day, it seems. I think that's wonderful.
Thank you for that question. That was really a beautiful question. And thank you for your support.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in. Okay.
Wow, that one made me emotional.
You had just a question, didn't you?
That was a good question.
Yeah, it really was. But I think that you brought up an excellent point and one to think about as you started out this conversation saying that your therapist encouraged you to write and to put this together. And you just said, maybe you didn't realize it, but you just said that as you continue to write this book, you became stronger and you started to take on the characters, your impression of your own character. So it was cathartic. It was very healing for you. Is that right?
Well, that's why it goes back to the saying, let it be written, let it be done. And I think I'm repeating that because there's so much negative thoughts in the survivor's mind. And what we think contributes to how we feel, and how we feel contributes to how we act. And then it just feeds right back into our negative thoughts. So here I was writing positive things about Callie's struggle, where she was coming out of it. Yeah, she struggled. But she was coming out of it because she was working on making it positive. So as I was writing positive things, I too started to feel positive.
Wow. Wow.
So, at what point while you were writing this book, when you said you started to feel positive, I mean, at first it couldn't have been a positive experience. At first it was just, how do I pull all this together? What do I need to do? What does this really mean? Where did you come up with the message that you were trying to portray? When did it click?
It really was a long journey. I started writing a little over 15 years ago, and I'd start, and I was like, nope, nothing's coming to me. But what happened was, as the time went on, I actually had dreams. And I really got a lot of the writing through my dreams. And I think my confidence increased because I felt like I was getting help with the writing. Now, I was getting help from real life, alive people, too. I had such a big team of people helping me take my, I'm actually going to say, average writing and turned it into what I am so proud of. So, you know, anyone, that's why any thought can really be, with the help of people, positive people, we have the ability to change. And I repeat, it doesn't matter how old we are.
So let me ask you this. When you were going through this, and we have not talked about, and I purposely have not asked about what happened with you, and I'm not going to do that now. What I'm going to ask you is about, we started out the show about health and wellness and the kinds of impacts that this situation has on health and wellness. I'm going to ask you, what kinds of health issues might this situation have you experienced as a result of this situation, and how did you overcome them?
Okay. That's all great questions. And I will tell you, I'm going to talk freely about this, and I think it's wonderful, a wonderful question, but I'm going to talk freely about this because I'm going to say something first. The shame should never belong to the survivor. The shame belongs to the abuser. So with that being, I remember, first I want to tell you, the story opens, and the trauma, the chapter one, the most difficult chapter to read, opens with what's based on the true story. It opens with the trauma in 1974 when Callie who is 9 years old, is growing up in the Bronx, and the story ends 40 years later when Callie is a grown woman living on Long Island, and Callie didn't have a safe center because she never told anyone what happened, and she kept the secret for over a decade. I think the secret was first discussed with her mentor when she was about 22 years old. So in the time from when she was 9 years old to 22, well, let me actually talk first person now. I caught that. I was talking third person. First person, I experienced a lot of anxiety. I experienced a lot of anger and a lot of inward shame, and inward anger causes depression. I wasn't aware of what depression was. I just knew that I was pretty isolated, not knowing why. But I was very close with my family. My brothers and I, we were all very close, my parents, but we never talked about this. Because it first of all, in 1974, it's not something a parent wants to believe would ever happen. So it was never talked about. So I didn't begin to cope with my trauma until many years later when I was in my 20s. And I never reported the abuse, and the abuser was never caught. Now, this is also really important. Statistics show that only about 7% of the sexual abuse that occurs is with a stranger, which was my case. Not about 93, and again, I say about because the statistics, it's all retrospective studies, but child sexual abuse is being done by people that the child and the family know and trust. And this is more harmful because, I mean, this has all other consequences. And the topic is really too important to ignore. So many details, and the information, as you already know, is rather extensive. So with this information, I would really love to come back and do maybe a strategies for families and their communities about this Enough Abuse program. But I didn't start therapy until after I was married and going through a divorce. I mean, I was happily married to a wonderful man because I had issues that were never dealt with. And, you know, it's sad because who knows what, you know, life events change, life decisions change based on what we know. And, of course, as we get older and we get wiser, we know more. So, of course, I would have made different decisions, but we don't go back in time. And all I know is that I am the happy person that I am today because of the decisions that were made. Perhaps maybe I could have become happier earlier. I don't know. I don't actually think about that. I am so present in the moment these days, but that's because I went over the hump. And I want
You worked at that. And let's make that clear, okay? You have to work at it. But you also, I'm asking, and I'm not assuming anything. I'm just asking, you know, your own health. Did your own health suffer at some point? Did you have digestive issues? Did you have sleep deprivation? I know you just said depression. What I'm trying to do is just say that, or maybe point out that if people are going through certain things like this, anxiety issues or not being able to handle too much in terms of stress, or stress becoming an everlasting kind of situation for you, and needing quiet and balance more than maybe other people, or, you know, just anything. I'm just asking so that people can start to grasp that maybe, and I guess where I'm going with this is that if we start to recognize that these kinds of issues occur. And again, with the list of things that I started the show with, the cognitive impairments, the brain development impairments, et cetera, the nutritional deprivation, physical defects, all of that. Maybe when we see it, we might maybe go to that in our heads a little bit and kind of keep an eye out, and maybe somebody needs our help that we're not tuning into. So that's why I ask you that question.
This is actually, I love the way you say tuning into others. When, as a registered dietitian in private practice, I ask my clients, do they smoke? Do they drink? Do they do any drugs? They are overeating, undereating? All of these are characteristics of people who may be struggling with something, because these behaviors are usually initially a coping mechanism to an adverse childhood experience that has never been addressed. So it is these behaviors, the smoking, the drinking, the overeating, that causes issues, high heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes. And so thank God, no, I don't have any of those. I did have stomach issues growing up. I was very hypervigilant. But as a dietitian, I learned to eat well, so I was fueled by good nutrition. As a personal trainer, I have learned to exercise. At times, it was an excess because I had all of this nervous energy. I learned to meditate, to slow down my mind. I actually took a class at Harvard, the mind-body medicine course, that was given by Herbert Benson, and that was a wonderful course. And then I came back and taught it. So when I teach something, and even at the university, when I teach my students, I am reminding myself that I learned it, and it is a wonderful reinforcement to my soul to keep living it.
Okay. Thank you for that. I think you just kind of tied it back up. We have another caller. Let's take another question, okay? I'm going to remind everybody that if you want to ask questions, please press the number 1 to get in the queue for questions, and we're going to take another call, okay?
Yes, please.
All right. Caller 5916. 5916.
Hi.
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 Hi. Hi. First of all, I want to congratulate you on your tenacity to make this book come to fruition. That is an incredible feat and an incredible accomplishment. I know part of this question was answered, but I'm wondering how your choice of profession of health and motivating others was influenced by your trauma, and how it helped you to process your experience and to grow.
Wonderful question. Thank you for asking that. Actually, as I wrote in the story, in The Ropes That Bind, this Tally is a registered dietitian. And I think that as a child, I'm not quite sure, but I'm feeling after I finished the book that I knew as a child that I wanted to help other people. Was it because of the trauma? I don't know. I know that in helping other people, it feeds my soul. I know that. So I think that's how it's always been healing for me. In the story, without giving away too much, Tally starts to realize pretty early in her life that helping other people, starting with her grandmother, it actually takes the attention away from herself, and it's not that it's distracting, but it's also it's healing. I hope I answered your question.
Yes, I think in any helping profession that what one says to their clients serves as whether it's a conscious or unconscious mode, that it serves as a reinforcement to the facilitator, to the professional, about their own lives. And the more that that occurs, the more that the client benefits and the more that the facilitator benefits.
You said it far better than I could have. Thank you. That was great. Thank you for sharing that.
Well, thank you for creating such an important book, and may health always be with you and peacefulness. Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your support.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for calling in. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Carol, these calls are making me very emotional.
I'm telling you, I'm just blown away. They're asking better questions than I am. I mean, it's amazing. So thank you, everybody, for that. You know, that's why I do this show, because I don't profess to know everything, and I welcome the calls and I welcome the questions, so that it keeps us all going. So it's just fabulous. I'm blown away. Thank you. So all that being said, Tracy, we have a few minutes left. I kind of want to bring this back full circle a little bit, because we talked about all of everything at this point, but I'd like to, it's a very intense topic, but I'd like to kind of spin it to a positive kind of ending for tonight, if you will.
Yes, please.
And you kind of mentioned it earlier in terms of, you know, you can turn things around. I think that I want to make the point, you have done this show a number of times as a registered dietitian, as a fitness expert. You've done a bunch of different things with us. But all that being said, you live, and the callers have pointed this out, you live this life of turning things into a positive value. So how does one that maybe doesn't do that on a daily basis or doesn't know how to do that on a daily basis, what would be like one of the first steps that they can do to just begin for a beginning, so that they can start to feel like they're taking those, and I'm assuming these are like baby steps until you get to where you need to be. How do they take their first baby step on this? Positively.
Okay, so maybe they can start with a gratitude journal. There's got to be one thing or one person that they feel such love towards. And they can go inside of themselves and focus on what they are grateful for and build on that, and every day come up with one more thing, one new thing, not keep repeating the same thing. I know that
give us a real simple, like, for instance, they get up in the morning, they're looking for anything, they don't feel like anything's positive. I mean, can it be just as simple as not having to struggle over finding a parking space? I'm just asking. I'm just kind of putting it out there so that people can start to understand how to change their mindset.
Yeah, but yes, of course it could be the parking space, but I'm thinking that we can make it even simpler. They're getting up in the morning. Thank you, God, or whatever you believe in. You're giving me another day to discover my purpose. I think finding and living our purpose is what really gives us the energy. And how do you do that? I think that you need to sit still for a while. Spend a little time by yourself. Go for the walk and see what comes into your mind. You know, I always ask myself this question, and I still do, actually, but I always had an answer for this. If you were to win, I used to say when I was a kid, $1 million, but $1 million is not going to go so far today. If you were to win $20 million, and clearly you don't need to work, what kind of work would you be doing with your life? maybe for some people it would be writing, drawing, painting, maybe working with animals. Well, then that's what you should find time to do in volunteer time. You still have to work. You got to pay your bills. But whatever you would do to bring you the most passion in your life, to make you feel like you're living your purpose, then you've got to find a little bit of time for that every week so that it feeds your soul. And every time you feed your soul, a little bit of that negativity gets chipped away. And then every day that passes, it makes it easier and easier to get up in the morning. I used to do something, I know this is going to sound really silly. I used to mindfully put my right foot on the floor coming off of the bed to make me laugh that I was starting off on the right foot. And it would make me smile because it was intentional. We have to live mindfully. When we just get out of bed and we keep doing what we've always done, then we're always going to have the same thoughts, the same feelings, and we're going to always do the same actions. If we start the day off with a mindfulness that's different than the day before, then there's an intent to change. And with that intent to change, we become more alive.
Interesting. Tracy, that was, I love that right foot in front of the other, that was fabulous, because that's exactly the point I was trying to make, in that it doesn't have to be anything big, and you don't have to struggle with what should I do today to be positive. It can be just that. And truly, one right foot in front of the other leads to two feet in front of the other, and it just keeps going, and you keep taking bigger steps and toward that what is important for you, and it's okay to take care of yourself. And wow, Tracy, thank you so very much. We're almost out of time.
I just want to say one thing. We could start even before you get out of bed, taking that one step in front of the other. You can actually start when you're getting out of bed, to start with your right foot landing on the floor first. So that's where that whole thought of starting off on the right foot. My clients love that. So I just wanted to share that with your listeners.
That's fabulous. That's just fabulous. And I want to make one final point, and that's those steps and everything we just talked about, turning things positively, you don't have to have gone through a childhood trauma to do that. It can be anything. It could be anything that you're facing now that you find as a struggle, and you're asking yourself questions as to why me, why this, why that. Take the baby steps and move a little forward, and it'll help. It really will help. So, all that being said, Tracy, congratulations on the book. I know it's going to be just a fabulous hit. Again, let people know how they can get to it, okay?
Thank you. I appreciate that. The name of the book is The Ropes That Bind, and you can easily find it on Amazon. And you can also please visit my website, theropesthatbind.com. Watch the 2-minute book trailer. I hope you'll like it. And I just thank you so much for all of your support and for listening tonight. And Carol, thank you for your constant support, and I really appreciate it.
We really want you to come back, and we want to not only follow up on this topic, but we kind of want to do an extension of some of the things we talked about, and your guided meditation last year was fabulous. We still get people accessing that one. So maybe we can do that.
I would love to. Anytime.
That'd be great. All that being said, guys, we have our next show will be August 25th, and we will be talking about to be or not to be gluten-free. Yes, we're finally going to do a show on gluten-free and what it is and what it means and what you need to know about it. And Jill Place is going to join us. She's an expert on the topic. She's got multiple books out on Amazon. And we're looking forward to having her with us. So join us on August 25th at 7 p.m. Eastern, and we'll be talking about gluten-free, to be or not to be. Tracy, have a wonderful evening. Everyone, have a wonderful evening. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for your questions. And if you have any more questions, please blog them to us on Facebook. And I know, Tracy, you check that too. So maybe we could, you know, if you have anything else that comes to mind, just let us know. And if you have any ideas on future shows, let us know on Facebook. And we will definitely get back to you. Thanks so much. Good night, everybody.
Good night.